Welcome to Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. I'm your host, Kathy Nelson, an electrical engineer who loves to hear and share stories of other women in STEM. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Haneen Salem. She's a policy analyst and strategist specializing in public sector development and education. Haneen and I talk specifically about a cybersecurity program for high school-aged youth she's been working on and how cybersecurity is a great field for girls, as well as boys, to go into. Haneen has a master's degree in organizational communication and a PhD in organizational performance measurement in the public sector. I love hearing how women's differing backgrounds have led them into advocacy for women and girls in STEM. Work in education and changes to public policy are so incredibly important to getting girls into these STEM fields. I hope you enjoy her story. Good morning, Haneen.
Good morning, Kathy. How have you been?
I have been good. How about you?
Pretty good, I would say. The year is starting off quite well. You know, we don't like the variant, of course, but hopefully we're starting to see the end of this. I don't know.
Gosh, you know, we keep thinking that, right? And it'll be like, oh, it's got to be ending. And then something else will come up. You're like, no, just kidding. It's back. It's like the relative that won't leave.
I know. And they're warning us kind of, right? That this is not necessarily going to translate into the end. So, right.
And there may never be an end. So it might just be something that we have to learn to live with. Although I hope that we can learn to live with it better than now.
I know. I mean, I keep thinking, we're lucky. We're witnessing history. You know, it just, this happens. So every few hundred years or so. So, but even my mind is starting to say, I can't accept this.
Well, I want to be on the other side of history, reading about it in a book, not living through it. I'm kind of done living through it. I'm like,
I know.
It was a novelty for the first few months. Like, it was nice to stay at home. Now I'm like, I want to be out. I want to see people. I don't want to have to wear a mask. I want to travel. Like, I want to go back. I know.
We had several cases in the family this Christmas. So it wasn't that pleasant. But I mean, thank God everyone is fine. But you still, you know, you're like, and also they talk about long-term effects. And, you know, so that's another, okay, fine. My husband had a mild case and it was okay. He's okay. But, you know, are there other things going on that we don't know about, you know?
Yeah. It's hard. And there's so many unknowns, which I think also is interesting from a standpoint of like, looking at through the lens of history of, you know, like all of like seeing how things develop and how scientists and people in medicine, you know, transition and look at things differently and change their protocols and stuff, but also from a standpoint of living through it, very confusing and challenging and stuff. Yes. And yeah, so my husband and I are trying to go to Thailand in February. We booked the trip in October thinking that like things would be, because things were okay in October, right? And now we're like, will we get to go? Because we haven't had COVID yet. And so I'm like, and what I'm hearing now is like, they say it's a matter of time, right? So it's not an if, it's a when. And so I'm like, okay, we need to stay well for the next 7 weeks.
Right. But then, you know, Europe is also moving away to dealing with this as an endemic.
Yeah.
And the UK as of next week, no requirements whatsoever. I think Spain announced yesterday or the day before. I traveled to Europe just before Christmas. Everything was fine here. And then I came back to a different context. Like, what's wrong? What just happened?
And you can't find tests, you know, like my son texted me the Tuesday before Christmas and he's like, Mom, can you get me out of school? He's 16. He's like, can you get me out of school? I have a cough and a sore throat. And I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to get you out of school, go to your nurse's office, get a home test to bring home and stop at the clinic and get a test. I got his test results from the clinic back 7 days later. Not helpful at all. So Christmas has come and gone and he's did the home at home test because he was going to be around grandparents. But I'm like, how are you supposed to know? And you know, you do all the things that you're supposed to do and you still can't, it's just like there's just so many cases. It's just so hard and we seem like ill-equipped to
we are ill-equipped. 2 years later, we are still ill-equipped. And the tests are sometimes false.
Right.
Like my daughter kept getting negative, mm-hmm. negative, and she was sick. And then, and this is like when she was doing a regular mm-hmm. PCR. And then when she did the at home, she came out positive. I mean,
that's interesting.
Yes.
You say here the other way.
It's the other way. Exactly. And so I'm like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's the people I know now who are getting COVID, they're all vaccinated, they're all boosted, you know, yes. everyone doing yeah. the same. The people that are super, yeah. super careful that don't go places. Yeah. But I'm also to the point that I'm very careful about where I go, and I wear a mask everywhere I go, and I try to go to places but I'm like, I went out and had dinner with friends last week because I'm like, it's been 2 years. I need to see people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
oh, no.
like I will oh, still no. be careful, but like my mental health does not feel great. You know, right. actually, and my therapist actually told me a couple sessions ago, she's like, you need to go have some girlfriend time. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I need to go have some girlfriend time.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I know. It's like 2 years of prison.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not good. This is just not good. No.
Anyway, hopefully things will, whatever the new normal will be, hopefully it'll be there soon and won't be such a pain to deal with and trying to travel. Yeah. I don't know. It's just all very,
dicey. I hope you get to go on your trip to Thailand. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about you and what you do. What do you currently do for a job?
I do a lot of things. Our company is mainly focused and concerned with coming up with ideas to address human capital development, and in particular, youth development, right? We just keep thinking about ways, about ideas, proposing projects to address the many challenges that are facing young people right now. I mean, we do operate in the education space, of course, you know, and I am in the education policy space, but it is a bit more than that. It is more about thinking, what will it take? What competencies, what skills, what is needed to equip young people to better prepare them for the future? And when I say the future, I'm talking about not only the workplace, not only higher education, their personal lives, you know, how to strive as human beings. So that has been our focus, definitely my focus, for years now, while I work on so many projects around the world that are around public policy questions and for education, of course, and human capital development arena, and also projects that are a bit more concrete in the sense they have stemmed from an idea that turned from an abstract idea to a project. So for example, character education, training teachers, you know, on how to communicate and convey certain set of skills. So that's sort of the range that at least I operate in mm-hmm. and have been operating in for more than 20 some years right now. But lately I've moved away from the typical academic offerings, you know, in content development, curriculum reviews, and, you know, assessment, student assessment, teachers' preparation for the typical academic offerings into those other set of skills that research and definitely experience have shown us to be equally important.
So when you say skills that you say that are equally important, so what kind of skills would those be?
So these really vary. We're talking about certain skills are related and linked to values, you know, resilience, hard work, perseverance, etc. Mm-hmm. Communication, the ability to have empathy, understand the points of views of others, and come up with strategies to convey and communicate your point of view and your message.
So it's kind of like teaching, like providing education on how to be a human, which is something that has been lacking, I think, in education for at least from the time that I was in school, which was quite a while ago.
Right. I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right in that it's just the basics. It's you kind of sometimes step back and think, why was this pushed aside? You know, why were these areas not focused on all these? I mean, there was for a while, you know, now there's this all this talk about soft skills and the different kinds of soft skills that we need to equip students with. But it's almost like it's like an afterthought. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's either an extra curriculum or an activity that or a boot camp that we want our kids to participate in. It's not, I don't want to say not taken seriously, but there's more weight until now on the purely academic side of education and learning, which is very important, of course. But you cannot only do that in isolation of, you know, looking in a holistic way at the at this human being in front of you. Mm-hmm. And thinking about what it would take to ensure that this young person will grow up to be a responsible citizen, a happy citizen, a well-balanced citizen, you know, equipped with all the tools that we know as adults are very important in life. And sometimes we come to realize their importance later rather than sooner in life.
Oh, for sure.
At the expense of our happiness, mental health, work success, etc. Personal success, for sure.
Well, and do you think, you know, going back to the pandemic, do you think that, I guess I feel like that is just exasperating this, basically what you talked about within young people, right? Because they don't have those coping skills anyway. And then you throw them in, you take away their friends, you take away their activities, all of the things that, you know, help them develop those skills. And they don't even have that anymore. So my son, I have a 16-year-old, I've got two other daughters too that are in college, but my 16-year-old, so he has thyroid cancer and he has cancer cells in his lungs. So I was super, super, especially before there was a vaccine and before he was old enough to get the vaccine, I didn't let him do anything. I mean, like he sat in his room more or less. I mean, we have a little ski hill in town that I let him go to last winter. That was about the only time he saw his friends for a year and a half from the time, you know, from being 14 until almost 16. That is, you know, and so I got to the point, like when he was about the time that he was able to get the vaccine, that I was like, I don't know which is worse, like him getting COVID and taking a chance on him having, you know, like long-term COVID in his lungs or his mental health. I'm like, this is not healthy. And so I think like the, you know, the, what you're talking about is just being, it must be just being exasperated by the pandemic for kids.
Absolutely. I mean, and thank you for sharing the story. And I know so many families are struggling with issues around the mental health of their children right now. And of course, like you said, I mean, we as adults are suffering and struggling and what have you. But the statistics that are coming out, just really scary data. And students, kids need to interact. Young people need to interact. They just need to be out interacting with their teachers, with their friends, going on activities. And you know, from a public policy point of view, there was a point of time when I think a lot of governments were struggling with this question, you know, which is more dangerous? You know, it's almost like the physical threat or the mental threat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's manifesting itself in so many ways, suicide attempts, crime, you know, behavioral problems. And I think it will continue. If tomorrow the entire world opens up, the problems will continue for a while. Mm-hmm. And so these are serious issues that policymakers and education people, and even in the health sector, in every sector, are struggling with. I mean, if you look at the workforce right now and the problems facing employers in finding people, you know, that's just, it's just one of the implications of the situation that we have at hand right now. And if maybe, you know, if we were aware and just conscious of all issues related to mental health years ago, and, you know, before the pandemic, and we've been equipping our young people with coping strategies, with different means to deal with stress. I mean, I don't have data, of course, but maybe that would have helped.
Yeah. Well, and it's very challenging to find a therapist right now because they are all completely booked. I will say, like, one thing that I do think has changed is the perception of getting help and seeking help for mental health. I'm going to go back to my son for a minute. So not when he was first diagnosed with cancer, but when we first found out that it had moved to his lungs, I took him to a therapist because, you know, he was making a lot of jokes. And I was like, I just want to make sure that he was okay. Yeah. And he was like, he didn't want to go. His therapist was like, you know, he's handling it fine. He's making jokes, but she's like, I don't see any, you know, if he doesn't want to come, you know, he's handling it fine. He's handling it, you know, the way that he needs to handle it. And then a few weeks ago, he asked me to schedule him an appointment with a therapist. And I was like a physical therapist or like a mental therapist? Because I was like trying to like gauge this. And this is, you know, probably 2 years later. And he's like for therapy, like for mental health. And I was like, okay, I didn't ask him any questions. But the fact that, you know, him as a 16-year-old boy is comfortable coming to me and saying, yes, Mom, I need to go see somebody, that made me really happy. You know, I didn't ask any more questions because whatever he wants to talk to, he doesn't want to talk to me about it. That's fine. But the fact that he, you know, came to me, I feel like there's not that, maybe the stigma around mental health and getting help for it is changing. So, you know, I feel like at least that's progress.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely agree with that. And I think definitely the trend here in the US and worldwide is more acceptance and more and the stigma is hopefully eroding with time, definitely. But I think there are still a considerable number of people who are suffering in silence.
For sure. I think it's family and situational dependent. You know, like I will say, like my husband, I was very adamant. Like I didn't want to tell my husband that my son brought this up to me because I didn't want him to like, and not that my husband thinks that therapy is bad. It's just that he would like tease him. And I'm like, I don't want him to do anything that's going to make my son go like, I shouldn't be doing this. And then like, I'll talk to friends and depending on what their backgrounds are and like what their cultural backgrounds, you know, some of them said like, oh yeah, I'm like, that wouldn't happen in my house, you know, or like my husband would be against that or something. So I think it's very dependent on the environment that you're in.
Yeah.
And, you know, making, you know, for me, I want to just make sure that, you know, my husband might tease them, but I'm like, I don't care. Like come and talk to me. And, you know, like, I just want to make sure that my kids are okay. But it is unfortunate that there are situations where people might not be able to get help because they're not getting the support from their parents or their family structure or their culture structure or whatever.
Right. Absolutely. And it's sometimes more than teasing. It's sometimes
for sure,
humiliating or dismissive or you know, and got up and up and you know, and so don't be spoiled, etc.
My most hated statement is the man up. Like that one like drives me absolutely up the wall, which is like, I feel like that would be, like that one, you know, saying that to like a 16-year-old boy is going to like, make them just internalize everything instead of being able to talk about it. So how does what you do with education and policy making, how does that flow into STEM and girls going into STEM and things like that? Where does that cross, and what kind of work do you do in that area?
So, you know, so we've done a lot of research over the past few years, and we've been pretty aware of the problem around girls' participation in STEMs and issues around that, talking about stigmas and talking about the availability of an encouraging and supportive environment. And even though we have data from around the world showing that girls are outperforming boys in a lot of academic fields and in many countries. But there is this issue for sure around STEMs and the participation of girls, and that has not gone away, even though we're all aware of it for years now. And so when we were, and we continue to always think about, you know, what is important? What are those skills that we need to think about and come up with solutions to make sure there are opportunities for young people to be the best that they can and get the opportunity to acquire certain skills. The idea of cybersecurity, which is a program we're offering now, we're calling it cyber citizenship. And I'll talk about this while I'm trying to answer your question. One aspect or one objective of this idea that has now ended up with the actual development of a course, an accredited course, was to actually provide girls with, and boys, of course, but girls as well, with the opportunity to be exposed to this work, right? I mean, when you go choose a career, if you have not explored a certain area, you haven't, you know, your school did not talk about it, there was mm-hmm. no curriculum about it, you know, mm-hmm. you don't know other people who have gone into this major, you just don't know that it exists.
Right.
And there must be so many young boys and girls, you know, who have the right attitude, the right mind for this kind, you know, this is the right study for them, but they don't know about it. Mm-hmm. And so by making a course like this available to boys and girls, again, I must say both genders, but as we know, we have more of a problem with girls in the STEMs world. You're giving them the opportunity to explore what it entails, get to know what this is about, mm-hmm. and hopefully igniting interest. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, I think we would be, even in a small way, contributing to bridging the gap that is so large right now in terms of supply of qualified people at the workforce in fields around cyber citizenship, cyber security. And we know it's only growing. There just is not enough people going into this field.
Right.
And which is a problem, right? Because hackers are getting, unfortunately, smarter, if we can use that word, and they're coming up with.
Oh, they're pretty smart.
The system, right? And, you know, we're all reading about all these incidences that are taking place. They're hacking schools right now. Mm-hmm. You know, in Albuquerque, you know, a cyber attack forced schools to cancel classes. And before that, there were several attacks. And so there are so many problems right now. You know, you have these cyber attacks that are real and dangerous and costly. And you just don't have enough people going into the right side of things, right? The good guys who are going to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. So this is sort of like the link, if you would. And you know, and the way we're approaching it, the way the program has been put together, of course, by not only experts in the field, but also educational experts who made sure this is age appropriate, this is engaging, it's just the right dose of information delivered in the right way. Mm-hmm. And so the way the course is structured and built, it is to ensure that whoever is exposed to this kind of information have enough information and data to protect themselves, protect their schools, protect their mm-hmm. families, later on protect their universities, their workplace, what have you. It's an amazing thing to add, amazing certificate to add to your CV as a young person. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it instills elements of the importance of being careful and responsible and, you know, and a, as the name says it, you know, you want to be a good citizen.
Right.
And by that role, and being aware of what's happening, being aware of how the bad guys are thinking and making sure they don't get into your system, get into your home, get into your school systems, take your information. What can you do about it? And so this was like a long answer, I think, to your question, but that is sort of the link. These are the set of skills that are important that can ignite interest, hopefully within a community of boys and girls, but also girls, right, to get into this field and then later on address the huge shortage in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. You're making me think that my 16-year-old son needs to take your course because he spends so much of his time on his computer and gaming. That's what he's doing all the time. And I'm always like so worried that who he's talking to, what information he's sharing, like, you know, right. And it's not even just the technical side, at least like for like when you get into gaming, it's the social side of it as well. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, and I don't know that most kids think about that, you know, they think that people are who they say they are and things like that. What is the like target age range of the program and what, and you say it's like an accredited program, but is it through like the public school system? Is it statewide? Like what's the focus area of it?
Right. So it just to go back to the point you mentioned, there are modules about social media and social engineering, you know, so, and honestly, like in hindsight, you know, we have all this technology, we made these technologies available for our children, you know, and they can go on social media and what have you. And we just send them out there without thinking about how to protect them, you know. Mm-hmm. And which it doesn't make sense, but we've done it. We've all done it to our kids.
Well, yeah, but I think part of that is lack of time and lack of education for the parents, right? So like, right. I'm an engineer, I don't necessarily know the best way to protect my, you know, I don't even know what systems my son is on, to be quite honest. I should. Yeah. I 100% right. know that I have failed in that area. I should know what he's doing. I should know what platform he's on. I should know what games he's playing. I try to keep him away from like the really bad gun ones. Like that's like probably about the extent. And I talk to him about do not give out your personal information to anybody. I don't want to keep coming back to the pandemic, but I think that that has put such a burden on parenting that you're trying to deal with your kid's school. You're trying to deal with working from home. And in some cases, absolutely. Like you just need your kid to like go do something so that you right. can get your work done because right. it's really hard to absolutely. Manage all this. And like, I feel super lucky. I had, my kids were older. I can't imagine, you know, having kids in elementary school yeah. while you're trying to work from home and stuff. Yeah. And so I think the whole piece of trying to help, trying to do that in the best way possible, it's really, really hard. And I think we're ill-equipped as parents to help our kids with that in our home environments.
You're absolutely right. It's the entire ecosystem. It is. It really is. It's the parents. It's the teachers. It's the school administrators, principals. You know, it's the entire ecosystem that we need to think about. And we're actually, that's what we're thinking about. So going back to your question, this particular course, it's targeted at high schoolers.
Okay.
So that age group, you know, and we're definitely thinking about starting other versions that target different age groups as well. Mm-hmm. Right. And as we all know, I mean, my kids are older too, but kids as young as 6-year-old maybe, and even younger are now using the technologies, right?
Sure.
So the need is for all, is for everyone. And it this particular course is accredited by City and Guilds. It's one of the most prestigious and oldest educational institutions in the UK. So it's fully accredited by them, as well as the Institute for Learning and Management. And as we speak, we are in discussion with different school systems and districts talking about issues around accreditation and licensings and what have you. It carries a lot of weight. The accreditation is not an easy process at all. Like, you know, you apply and, you know, they look to get approved. They look at issues around learning, learner inclusivity, accessibility to support the learning needs of diverse groups, reference to models, theories, collaborative learning, level of facilitation provided, elements of self-awareness and reflection. The list is very long. It's a very difficult process, and that we successfully went through and got it. And like I said, we're looking at getting more and more in-country accreditation and certification.
So is this an online program that is available like through a school system, that they would go through their school system, but the program itself would be online and then the certificate would come through that? Or would they go like directly through your program, or how does that piece work?
So it's either. Right now it's a program that's available through us, through, you know, our website. You can go in, or school can come in and get a license for all their students, a portion of their students, you know. School systems can do the same, and districts can do the same. And it's so easy to use and accessible by the target group. They can download it on their phones, on their laptop. They can do it online. There's 24-hour support. There are already included in the course predetermined questions and answers that the educational people and the experts thought might be coming up. So a student can pose a question and the system can answer it. And if it's a question that's not, you know, pre-listed, they can contact a support group of experts who are available 24 hours and who can address their questions. It's iPhone compatible, Android compatible, and really easy to use. And it's a gated, it includes 9 modules, and it's gated learning in the sense that the young person would go through module 1, then take the assessment, the questions, and if they successfully answer the questions and respond to those questions, they can go into the second module and third module and what have you. And they get batches by the end of every module, and then they get the certificate at the end of the course.
It sounds very individualized. So one of the questions that I had in my mind was, are there issues with getting girls to be involved because their friends are doing it? Because that was always what I would see with my daughters. Like if their friends weren't doing it, they didn't want to take, you know, coding classes and things like that. But if it's individualized, I wouldn't see the social side of it being as big of an issue. What are you seeing from a registration standpoint for girls versus boys? Are you seeing girls sign up for the course as much as boys, or kind of what are you seeing?
No, we're not, unfortunately. And we know that, and right now we're coming up with ideas to specifically target girls. You know, bootcamp ideas and similar ideas, and just more targeted efforts to reach out. So just talking to you today, and we're hoping that we will get the word out and get to encourage more girls and more parents to encourage their girls to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're making me also wonder. So I have my middle daughter is currently going to college in computer science. And I've never talked to her about cybersecurity, about that being an area to explore. I would see cybersecurity as not really coding. I would see it more as like a way of like breaking things on purpose to try to make things fail or to like get, you know, like hack into things and being able to understand that. I'm going to do maybe a little research and put in the episode notes, but I'm kind of curious what, how much of a link there is between computer science and cybersecurity for what people go into, because I think that that's an interesting area. And as you talked about, it's, you know, definitely a needed area. And I don't think it gets, I don't think it gets talked about a lot, and it's only going to become more and more needed because there's more and more people trying to break into things all the time and do damage. And, you know, not just people, but nation states and, you know, all kinds of things that can cause huge amounts of havoc. I work in the energy industry, and, you know, the energy sector, the electric grid is a target all the time. And, you know, take down a whole electric grid is very, very bad for everybody.
Right, exactly. No, there isn't a sector that is safe. There isn't an institution that is safe. So, you know, in the past, we would think about this as mainly targeted at banks, you know, and in stealing personal information. Right. But it's not like that anymore. And you know, you've heard about all the ransoms that are, you know, it just, it's just getting a life of its own. And, you know, and unfortunately, well, I think it's very interesting that we hear more and more about companies hiring people who, young people who are actually have been convicted.
The hackers.
To hack
into their systems to find the holes. Yeah.
And, you know, have gone through some sort of rehabilitation. And then you need people who think, who know how the hackers think, right? So that they can counter. And that's exactly what we are aiming at, you know, not necessarily at a very technical dose of things, right? But to at least create the necessary awareness of the different elements. You know, what does malware mean? What is cyber hygiene? How do hackers think? You know, what goes on, you know, in their mind? You know, how do they approach things? What have you? And so, and hopefully try to prevent and discourage a lot of young people from going the wrong direction.
Right. Use their skills for good as opposed to evil.
Exactly. And there's a world of opportunities for you, young person, you know, if you have those kinds of, you know, if you have the right aptitude to learn those skills, you know, use them for something good. Companies, the workforce is so desperate for people with those set of skills.
Are there other programs that you guys run or are thinking about running in addition to cybersecurity along the lines of STEM and getting girls into STEM? Or kind of like, do you see this as the start and see this snowballing into something else? Kind of, what are your goals for what you're getting into?
Yes. So the answer is yes, definitely. We are already in discussion with a number of experts in two other fields, which is one is entrepreneurship. Right, equipping the recipient of a course with the required set of skills to start their own business, to do something, you know, and that in and by itself, you know, we also know that there are issues around girls getting into fields like that and starting their own businesses and pursuing their own dreams and doing something in that area. And the other idea we have is around financial literacy, which is very important. Another area, you know, usually looked upon, you know, it's math heavy. It's more towards boys rather than girls, what have you. So with the notion of encouraging girls in mind, and this will be weaved into anything that we develop and the way it will be targeted and addressed to girls in the market. So these are two things I'm just sharing for the first time about next steps and next ideas that would actually address issues around involvement of girls in fields that are not necessarily at the face of it very appealing to girls, or at least this is the perception.
I'm going to shift for a second. How did you get interested in education and education policy and go down like your line of work? And then how does your interest then tie into your interest in getting girls into STEM?
So it's, this is like interesting because if you ask me that question, I'm not going to say how many years ago, but when I was in school, I just wanted to be an engineer. I wanted to be an architect. I mean, that's kind of...
Oh, we talked about this on the intro because I also wanted to be an architect and then changed to engineering, right. because it was too much art and I was not artistic.
I'm definitely not artistic. I appreciate art, but mm-hmm. I still am fascinated by buildings, mm-hmm. Design. And my story is whenever I go into any house, I kind of forget after a while all the details, maybe about the people, about what we talked about, what we had for lunch. But I can go back and draw every house I've ever visited in terms of rooms and height of ceilings. And so.
Oh, interesting.
So that's kind of, I'm really still fascinated by architecture and that line of engineering. But as in everything in life, sometimes the journey takes you into different areas. And it started at the academic level. And I started getting more and more interested with the process of decision making and the process of analyzing data to look at options. Maybe that's engineering as well. I don't know, Kathy.
Data analytics and engineering are very, they're very similar.
And then that slowly took me into the world of public policy. Mm-hmm. And planning was an area of interest to me. Mm-hmm. And I got into organizational measurement, strategic planning, decision making. And then all of that was applied by chance at the beginning in the education sector. And then that word really attracted me and just fascinated me. And it also brought about so many concerns that are still existent in terms of equity, in terms of providing equal opportunities to different gender-wise, different segments of the community, different parts of the world, mm-hmm. And that is now history. I continue to work and operate within that world until today.
How do you find public policy? How do you find working in that space?
I have to say it can be very frustrating. It yes. needs a lot of patience, right? And I did not know myself to be a patient person in the past. But it actually teaches you, maybe that's one good outcome. It teaches you patience. It just, you are forced to become patient and to believe in the importance of accumulation. Very, very slow accumulation. Very, very slow. Positive steps. Baby. Minute baby steps to get to your goal.
And sometimes two steps forward and three steps back. Yeah. And yes.
Oh, for sure. All the time. Yes.
Well, and the reason I ask, I was involved in an industry trade association for about 10 years where I chaired the public policy and did advocacy and things like that within my industry. And I always, when someone brought up the idea of me going down that path, I was like, well, I'm not interested in politics and, but I found it fascinating. And to see the tie between, I'm a very technical person. I'm an engineer, but to see the tie between public policy and how that affects what you do at a technical level, I thought was really, really interesting. And I had never made that tie until I went into this role. And so I found it to be like really interesting. Also super frustrating from your standpoint. Like sometimes you feel like you're beating your head against a brick wall over and over and over.
Yeah.
You don't make progress. And there are things that I worked on that I don't think will happen in my lifetime. It's so slow. It may never happen. I mean, and that's like another thing that you have to be kind of accepting of, like this may never, this thing that I think is super, super important that I'm, advocating so strongly for, it may never happen in my lifetime. I may never see it. That's
so right. That is so true. There are so many initiatives and projects I just poured my soul into and worked so hard in, and they never saw, they just did not materialize.
Yeah.
But it just serves to highlight the importance of this work. It's very hard work, right? But you have to do it if you actually want to contribute to the agenda in whatever sector you're working in. You just, you know, somebody needs to do it.
Right.
And you keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And at the end of the day, I always talk with my colleagues and team, like, if we achieve 10% of what we were aiming at when we went into this, we've done something.
Right.
We've moved this very vehicle machine forward.
Right.
And by the way, the entire idea of coming up with online courses and coming up with previously unconventional ways to reach out, based on the thinking that sometimes you need to think outside the box. So you work with institutions, you work with governments, you know, you work in the public policy, but also what else can you do to move a bit faster and do something about this gap that your research and your work is so, it's shouting at you, it's showing you that you need to do something about it. And you just think, you need to think of all the ways that something can be done to address a certain challenge.
And I hate going back to the pandemic, but that accelerated the ability to do things online so much, because that technology moved faster than it has ever moved before in order to just enable all of the remote working and everything like that. But it's enabled the technology to allow more online coursework, you know, whether it's online coursework because you need to do online coursework or online coursework because you're trying to get whatever course you're offering to people around the world, and things become globally accessible, probably have become more globally accessible in the last 2 years than they have been previously. And all the policy makings and all of those things just leapt forward because they had to, because of this, you know, horrible circumstance that we had worldwide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And by the way, this idea that we had, it started before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, how would it, you know, would people be receptive to online learning? You know, so we thought, okay, let's accredit the course. Let's make it so accessible. Let's, you know, look at the platforms. Let's look at the making sure it's downloadable. It can be accessed via phones and what have you. And then the pandemic hit us. So we all of us went through a mind freeze period of time after the pandemic, where we're like, you know, what's going on? What are we going to do, etc. But then, as you said, the pandemic, maybe that's one good outcome of the pandemic. You know, it pushed us. It put us face to face with those challenges that we were aware of, but we're not doing anything about for years. And it also created a more friendly environment towards those ideas and notions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that, I mean, you talked about having been starting the program online beforehand. And I think that I would guess that by having the program already started, it put you in a much better position than had you been planning to do like a textbook course in person, face to face. You had already started that process, and so you could transition probably a lot more quickly.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. I guess in that sense, as unlucky as the pandemic has been, we were lucky.
I hope that, you know, the things that were good will stay and the things that are bad will go.
that's a good wish. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But there are good things that came out of it. It's just that it will be nice to get to the point where you can choose the good things as opposed to having things thrust upon you.
And it would be good to get to a point where this is in our rear view window, you know, and we just, you know, that's just something that we've gone through and we've learned this and that lessons, and moving forward, hopefully we will not forget these lessons and just reflect and how those 2 years have passed by. It's definitely a difficult experience for all of us. And for the education sector, though, I mean, as you said, I think it forced us to think in different ways. It proved that there are other models that are worth looking into and integrating into our system. And it highlighted the importance of paying attention to certain life skills. And hopefully that will stick with us.
Yeah, hopefully. Is there anything about the program that we haven't touched on that you want to share?
I've taken the program course myself. And I found it, of course, fascinating. And I'm like, oh my God, then I'm still at that high school level. I'm just learning about all these things that I wasn't even aware of. It's just very, it's an engaging course. It's, like I said, accredited. It's a wonderful addition to a young person's CV. I just wanted to add one more thing, I think, that we haven't talked about. It's almost like a living document, this course is, right? So we have built in a review process that is semi-annual and annual to make sure that we continue to update the information that's in there and mm-hmm. keep including real life examples of what's actually happening. As unfortunately the hackers continue to outsmart a lot of systems, you know, we want to make sure that the student who is taking this course is fully aware of what's going on, what's the latest thinking, what are the latest practices and thinking and technologies and ideas to combat hackers and to ensure good cyber hygiene and how to be an actual responsible cyber citizen in the community that you operate in.
I might check out the course or see if I can or have my son check out the course if I can get him to quit gaming for a little bit and use his computer for something else.
That's a great idea.
Do you have any advice for girls thinking about going into STEM or young women thinking about going into STEM?
I do. And I don't want to do the typical believe in yourself, follow your dreams, you know, all of that, although that is important, you know. I would just say check out the data. Check out, you know, look at the actual data that is showing us how girls are academically outperforming boys. You know, it's not a competition, right? And we want all genders to have equal opportunities to education and STEMs and what have you. But the evidence is there. And I would always encourage young girls, just like I had in my life, a lot of like wonderful women who were role models for me in my life. And I continue to have amazing role models, female role models throughout my career, actually. And hopefully now I'm serving as a role model for many younger colleagues and women that are in my life right now. I would always, I encourage young girls to just read about different outstanding woman, or even identify some in their own lives and just try to see how their lives, what they've been through, you know, what lessons they have learned. And there's a lot of wisdom and lessons learned to be shared by this simple exercise.
Yep, for sure. Well, Haneen, I have absolutely enjoyed our conversation. It's been so much fun. I'm so glad I've had the chance to talk with you and hear more about your program and the work that you do. I think it's so very important, and education is, you know, that's the key to all of young people's future. And, you know, having the programs to support STEM and honestly humaning is super, super important. And, you know, the work that you do, well, I know it's slow and frustrating, is really important. And I'm glad that you're doing it.
I'm very motivated to keep going, and I just want to keep going. And I am hoping if I end up making a small dent, that would be something in the system. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Ordinarily Extraordinary Conversations with Women in STEM. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like it and write a review. If you'd like to get episodes delivered to you every week, please hit the subscribe button. And please join me for future episodes. Thank you.